Hello and welcome to another recording from our recent Future of London event. I'm Damien Wild. Cities are often judged by the quality of their infrastructure, transport, utilities and digital, and London's is under pressure. Over the next hour, we'll discuss all aspects of the capital's tubes and pipes. Now, for this series, we've teamed up with the NLA, which of course runs the London Real Estate Forum, and this discussion is hosted by their programme director, Amy Till. For a diverse perspective, Amy speaks to the Mayor of Newham and the City of London. Responding are Savills, Wilkinson Air and the Centre for London. It's a discussion that touches on all aspects of what makes London tick. Diversity and population growth, deprivation and the need for investment, climate change and connectivity, as well, of course, as transport and utilities. I do hope you enjoy it.
Hello and welcome to EG's Future of London series, hosted with NLA's London Real Estate Forum. I'm Amy Till, Programme Director at NLA, and today I will be addressing one of the six key challenges facing the capital as part of the wider Future of London series that will be taking place throughout October. For today's challenge, I'm delighted to be joined by the Mayor of Newham, Mayor Fiaz, and by Carolyn Dwyer, who is Director of the Built Environment for the City of London. And these interviews will form part of the wider discussion that we're having about what London needs, what infrastructure London needs to become a truly thriving city. So the first question I have for you is, what are the challenges that you and the City of London are facing around delivering the infrastructure that you need for the future, around utilities or digital or transport infrastructure?
Okay, thanks, Amy. Well, first thing I would say is London is a really thriving city. It's absolutely the world's favourite city in which to do business. And my job's all around making sure that the square mile in the centre of the City of London has all the infrastructure it needs to retain that successful position. One of our biggest challenges is climate action. We're really moving towards a position of net zero, both for the city corporation and for the square mile itself, and embedding climate resilience into all of our infrastructure. So everything we're doing, we're now looking at through those lenses so that we can really champion inclusive and sustainable growth.
That's fantastic to hear. And I'm interested to hear about the digital infrastructure that you're looking into and what kind of challenges the city's facing in that area.
Well, of course, digital infrastructure is now the fourth utility. It's absolutely critical to business and to all of our day-to-day lives. And the city's done a huge amount here. We've already put in free gigabit Wi-Fi across the city. We've got a wholesale wireless concession and 4G and 5G apparatus all over the city. And we've supported the rollout of fibre to the premises across the city. But some of the challenges that come with that, one of our biggest challenges in the square mile is space. We have so little space to play with. And if you peel the surface off our roads, there's this crazy spaghetti underneath of all the infrastructure that's been laid in the roads for over 100 years. And it's really hard to find space to put new facilities and new infrastructure in. So we may have to accept that cities are going to start looking different as all the requirements for 4G and 5G are implemented across our spaces. Another challenge that we're facing is knowing who owns all the properties in the city. So we've worked really closely with BT Openreach to roll out fibre to the premises across the whole of the city. It's there and it's available. It can be connected into any building at no cost to the owner, but we don't always know who the owner is, and that's a really tough thing to find out sometimes. So ways of finding that information would be really helpful to us. And a third thing we're really keen on is that there are brilliant organisations like William Newton's Wired Score organisation that rate the connectivity of buildings. And we feel that should be displayed in the building's foyer. It's a really critical part of information about that building. And we'd love to encourage people to display how well connected their buildings are and keep that score visible to everybody. So those are some of the challenges in digital infrastructure.
That's really interesting. Actually, the role of real estate in all of this was going to be one of my questions. So it's interesting to hear there about how access and connections with the people who own buildings and run buildings is playing a part in all of this. And it sounds like it's a hugely collaborative effort to make these things happen. Could you tell me a bit about the different partnerships that you have and the people that you've been working on these projects?
Across all of our infrastructure and development, everything is collaborative. No one organisation can deliver any of this on their own. And London's a huge and complex city. We all have to work together. So we're working really closely with our neighbouring boroughs, with the Mayor's Office and Transport for London, across all of these things, with undertakers, with UKPN, with the regulator. All of these people are really critical partners, and of course the property industry playing their part in this as well.
Great. The other area I was interested to hear what you've got going on in the city and some of the challenges that you face that you're facing is around street infrastructure. And I know the city has a program to try and reduce the number of cars in the city. I'd love to hear a bit more about that.
So again, one of the main challenges for us with transport is space. There's so little space, and how do we make really, really good use of the space that we've got? And constant engagement with the stakeholders in the city tells us that people, it's really important to people that they feel safe and that they enjoy their journeys as they move around the city. And managing intensification. So everything we've been doing has been looking towards growth and sustainable growth in the city. And that has helped us in a way, because now in the short term, we're looking at social distancing and the way we've been giving more space to pedestrians and making space more pleasant and feel more safe and less cluttered is helping both on the long-term agenda there and on the shorter term agenda to really encourage people to come back to their offices in the city to feel safe and to support businesses.
Mm. And obviously, we're facing lots of challenges at the moment in response to the pandemic. Have you found that your kind of longer term future targets and ambitions have shifted dramatically, or is it more of a kind of short term fix, but the longer term stuff remains the same?
We think in terms of transport, we really think the longer term stuff remains the same. And in fact, if you like, the current crisis has given us an opportunity to try things on an experimental basis that are along the lines that we were going to try anyway. So we've widened some streets using semi-permanent measures. And we normally, before we do things, we would have very, very extensive consultation and engagement. And what this has allowed us to do is to put things in these temporary measures and do the engagement in real time. So actually to try things out, to say to people, is this working or not? And so they're consistent with the things we wanted to do anyway. We're really keen to prioritise people walking and to make the city completely accessible, regardless of any protected characteristics, so everybody can move around in a really accessible way. And we're developing a street accessibility standard. And this crisis is giving us the opportunity to test and experiment with some of those measures. And some of them will no doubt become permanent in due course. And some of them, people will say, do you know what, it's not quite working. We need to adjust. We need to take a step back. And that gives us the opportunity to do that.
Yeah, yeah. And you touched earlier on digital infrastructure being a key utility for people who live and work and come to the city. Are you facing any other challenges around utilities in the city?
Infrastructure in the city is so critical. And one of the issues we have is aging infrastructure. So we've recently been supporting water and gas main replacements in the city. And some of the pipes are over 100 years old. It's absolutely phenomenal. We plan and coordinate as much as we can. So if a road has to be, funnily enough, we call it a road opened, which really means it's closed to traffic because you have to open, dig a big hole in it. So when a road's opened for utilities, we make sure that all the utilities are invited to come and do any works that they need to try and minimise disruption. Space is a huge issue again. We have a network of pipe subways under the city streets. There's about 5 kilometres of tunnels that are big enough for a person to walk through. And we'd really like to extend that and connect it together, but the expense of doing that is huge. And at the moment, legislation doesn't allow us to recover costs. So there are some things we quite like to do. we're talking to private investors about opportunities to extend our networks and implement smart energy networks in the city.
Great. Is there anything you haven't covered that you'd like to in terms of challenges you're facing on this front?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things on infrastructure is allowing investment ahead of time. So London generally runs on an 11 kV network. For tall buildings, we need more power than that. So there's a 33 kV provision. But the legislation requires that those are booked and paid for in advance, which means that we anticipate lots of large developments in the city. We know what's coming. We know where they're going. We've got a local plan that sets all of that out for us. But the providers are not allowed to invest ahead of time. So each development, we have to have the disruption of going through the process again. So we'd really like to be able to work collaboratively to consider allowing investment ahead of time where we know that we're in a growth area. That would be so helpful to us.
Great. Well, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts on this topic and the challenges that you're facing. It's definitely providing some very interesting areas for discussion when we bring our panel together to reflect on this. So thank you.
Thank you, Amy.
Hello, Mayor Fears. How are you?
Hi, I'm well. Thank you very much for inviting me onto and being part of this really important discussion.
Oh, well, thank you so much for joining us for this interview, which, as you say, forms part of a wider discussion around what infrastructure London needs to become a truly thriving city. Obviously, a very broad spectrum of challenges that you're facing in Newham, and I'm sure a lot of them won't be, many of them are unique to you, but will also be relevant to other boroughs across London. And great to hear that you have these strategies for the role that infrastructure is playing around these issues that you're facing. I wondered if we could touch on digital infrastructure, and you mentioned opportunities for young people, and obviously in this world of digitalisation that we're in, connectivity is absolutely key. Could you tell us a bit about the challenges that you're facing and what you're hoping to achieve in that area?
The digital infrastructure piece is something that has for a long period afflicted the whole of the capital, and I know that it was a particular area of concern for the current Mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, and through the work that is being led by Theo Blackwell, London's first information commissioner. All of that work is currently being progressed in terms of ensuring that London as a global city remains a prominent global city predicated on that important digital infrastructure that enables us to maintain our connection with the rest of the world. In the context of Newham, we are building in that digital infrastructure as part of our broader vision for the requirements of this borough to ensure that we are fit for purpose for the 21st century, for ensuring that we are responding to the changing nature of the economy and what that means in terms of workforce needs and the way in which people do their jobs. And we have commenced that endeavour through our partnership working with the Mayor of London in the context of the Royal Docks Enterprise Zone, which has placed a huge emphasis on the need for the Royal Docks Enterprise Zone, which is London's only enterprise zone. And over the next 25 years, it will become a real hub of innovation, green tech, connection to the rest of the world, which is especially important as we approach the final details of what Britain post-Brexit will look like. So they've done an assessment in terms of the digital infrastructure in the Royal Docks Enterprise Zone, and a significant amount of investment is commencing on that front. But it also is important for me to ensure that that core principle of equity and an equality that is able to be accessed by all of our Newham residents is addressed. So digital infrastructure needs to respond to the fact and the reality that there are going to be large number of residents who, for a whole range of reasons, accessing that digital infrastructure is difficult and challenging. We've got to respond in a substantive way to issues of the digital divide. We do not want a digital hierarchy, which lends itself to even more disparities between different groups. So we are working through the practicalities of what that means.
Infrastructure is obviously a very broad term. I wondered if we could also touch on transport and utilities. Obviously, lots happening and in the pipeline on the transport side of things for Newham. Are you hitting any barriers on this side of things for delivering what you need?
So Newham as a borough located in East London, in the context of a global capital city expanding and expanding east, is absolutely at the centre of London's growth. And we are, a borough that has the largest number of Crossrail stations. We have a major transport hub in the form of, Stratford Centre, which is a major metropolitan centre. And so we have been analysing and assessing issues of existing capacity, future capacity, particularly, Stratford Station and that area around the Stratford Metropolitan Centre. We're obviously mindful of the situation that Transport for London finds itself in as a consequence of COVID-19. But I think more importantly, we've got to recognise that the requirements as assessed and identified pre-COVID may very well have clearly changed since COVID-19. We are seeing, more remote working from home, and that will be a reality for the foreseeable future as a consequence of the ongoing challenge of COVID-19. But I think the COVID-19 experience has simply accelerated a trend that was happening anyway, where you were seeing large scale organisations, companies, and also local authorities beginning to think in a much more smarter way around how you use office space, and that balance between people being able to work in the office but also working from home will have an impact in terms of the transport need and requirement in any locality. And, Newham isn't immune from that assessment and reanalysis that's required. I think also as a consequence of COVID-19, we need to be mindful and cognizant of the fact that transport use has decreased significantly. The fact that here in Newham we are embracing the 15-minute neighbourhood concept, coupled with people being encouraged to work from home, that's going to have an impact around transport infrastructure needs. And for us, we're placing a huge emphasis on the sustainable transport agenda. As you know, London more broadly has a sustainable transport strategy taking us to 2042, where 80% of transport modality is required to shift away from cars, more onto public transport, more onto cycling, more onto walking. So all of that is a factor in terms of our assessment or reassessment of transport need. But that's not to say that we diminish or we don't recognise the importance of public transport as the instigators and enablers of economic regeneration and economic activity in neighbourhoods. We just, I suspect, will need to just reflect and rethink some elements of that.
The last question I wanted to ask you was just around real estate and the role that the real estate industry can play in delivering the infrastructure that you need in Newham.
In the context of ensuring that East London and Newham remains, a focal point for London's expansion, the real estate piece is going to be critical because people will still need to have offices, workplaces. This idea that everyone can easily work from home needs to be challenged because many of our residents live in areas and neighbourhoods of real high density and don't have the option of a spare room that they can convert to an office. So we need to be very much working collaboratively with the real estate sector in order to rethink what is required given the realities that we now face.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Mayor Fiers, thank you so much for your time and sharing some really interesting insights around the challenges that you're facing and what's happening in Newham. So thanks very much.
Thank you.
Hello again. Now, for the second part of the session, I'm joined by some industry experts to respond to the challenge areas that were outlined by the interviews just now. So I'm thrilled to welcome Ben Rogers, Director of Centre for London, Rory Brooke, Head of Economics at Savills, and Giles Martin, Director at Wilkinson Air. Ben, Rory, Giles, thanks so much for joining us. So what infrastructure does London need to become a truly thriving city? This is obviously a huge topic. We could have a number of different sessions on this. And in the interviews, we covered transport infrastructure, digital infrastructure, and utilities. There were a few key challenge areas emerging that I'd like us to respond on today. And I thought we should start with one of the biggest challenges facing us all, which is around climate resilience. And both Carolyn Dwyer and Mayor Fiers talked about climate action and the sustainable transport agenda. They also talked about the shift from cars to active travel. And Mayor Fiers also acknowledged the key role that public transport and new public transport infrastructure plays in the economic regeneration of neighbourhoods. So, Giles, could you kick us off with your thoughts on the infrastructure that London needs for the future and the part that it needs to play in the net zero agenda?
Well, certainly, Amy. The first thing I'd say is that if you want to make your carbon footprint as small as possible, the best thing you can do is live in a big, dense urban centre. And we Londoners have the lowest carbon footprint of Brits because basically everyone's using it all the space at once. So lots of people on a train, lots of people on a pavement. Getting your supermarket deliveries delivered to your door is actually a very low carbon thing to do. I mean, sadly, everyone's got back in their cars because of the COVID crisis. And I hope we end up back in a position where we're all back on good, dense urban infrastructure. And I think Crossrail, it was the biggest building project in Europe. Still not quite ready, but we need to crack on with Crossrail 2. We need to crack on with High Speed 2. We can't stop and rest on our laurels that Crossrail's been a success. Well, of course, it's not yet a success, but it will be.
Thanks, Giles. Ben, what's your take on this point?
Well, just sort of stepping back a bit, I think the answer to your question, what sort of infrastructure do we need for a thriving city, is we're much less certain about that now than we were a year ago. It's very unclear how all this is going to pan out. There's one scenario, which is that we get a vaccine really quickly and we sort of revert to something quite like normal quite quickly. But if I think the vaccine takes a couple of years to sort of really to work, that would be very different. And if this thing proves to be endemic, which I hope it won't be, or it's followed by other pandemics, then we'll have to think really, really differently about cities and about the infrastructure that we need. I think even on the best scenario, it seems to me likely that there'll be more home working and people will probably choose settlement patterns will change slightly as some people decide that they actually want to move away from cities. When it comes to climate change, I think it's important to think not just about resilience and not just about adapting to climate change, but obviously doing more to cut our carbon emissions. We're not doing that particularly well as a city. We've made huge strides nationally on decarbonizing power, or particularly electricity. But as a city, we still, the two big areas where we emit hugely, one is transport, and particularly road transport, and that's largely, just petrol and diesel cars. And the other is just the heating of our buildings and the reliance on gas. Both workspaces and homes. So the sort of big agenda for decarbonisation in London is getting people out of cars and electrifying mobility, and then retrofitting our homes so they're both better insulated and rely less on gas heating and more on sustainable electricity. Maybe I can just actually one thing very quickly just to say, I mean, London, by the way, is particularly vulnerable. Of all regions in the UK, London is the most vulnerable to extreme heats and increased rain. It's got the greatest number of neighbourhoods vulnerable to those things. And the neighbourhoods that are most vulnerable are largely in the east end of London, which are already the sort of poorest neighbourhoods, Tower Hamlets and Newham in particular.
Mm. So really, really critical that we're keeping this top of mind. Yeah. So major public transport infrastructure critical, and also look towards electric mobility in lots of different areas. Rory, perhaps I come to you next. So when talking about the transport and climate agenda, Carolyn Dwyer from the City of London said that the long-term strategy remains largely the same, but COVID and the COVID crisis has given them the opportunity to try new things on an experimental basis. What's your take on this?
Yes, I think there's very much opportunities, but also risks and pitfalls. So one of the things that Caroline mentioned is the opportunity for utilities tunnel network in City of London, and maybe more widely. This is some work that I led on a few years ago for the city, looking at the potential of this. And we concluded actually, in terms of the cost, it was very doable, could easily be financed with the right mechanisms in place. But as Caroline mentioned, there's definitely a need for at least secondary legislation, if not more, to get that in place. And I think there needs to be more institutional will at different levels of government to unlock those sorts of opportunities. I think there's definitely a need to step up the game on electric vehicle charging. You know, it's just been mentioned, there's one of London's main sources of carbon emissions is petrol and diesel cars. It all looks like we're on the edge of a revolution with a switch towards electrical cars and vehicles. But that's really going to face problems if we haven't got the electric vehicle charging infrastructure in place. And I think that's at two key levels. One is the overall capacity of the power network needs to be substantially increased. And the other is that the electrical vehicle charging infrastructure needs to be in place. And that needs a whole sort of strategy around, and it's not just in residential neighbourhoods, it's also on industrial estates, for example, on office parks, on retail parks. There's a whole strategy that needs to be thought through and invested in. I think one of the things that's been happening over the last two or three months is sort of initiatives to try and reduce car use and close down streets. And certainly from a personal view in my part of London, I think this is fairly disastrously being implemented, and it's creating a lot of hostility from people. Their knee-jerk reactions and measures that aren't really thought through are just creating a lot of inconvenience for residents rather than actually solving real problems. And so I think there's a real danger of that having a strong backlash, and then other things that are, you know, around Extinction Rebellion and things that are more important around reducing carbon are then getting caught up in that, and there's a real danger of a backlash and reaction against it.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Thanks, Rory. You touched on EV strategy and the importance of a strategy. Do you think that that needs to be something that's looked at London-wide or on a more regional basis?
Yes, I think London-wide, and I think it needs to be at various different levels. So planning policy, for example, is one way in which it could be encouraged. As I say, there hasn't been much attention so far on industrial estates, but actually they're quite an interesting potential for EV charging, because they tap into both the commercial vehicles that will be on industrial estates, particularly the smaller lorries and white vans, and also workers travelling to work by car, which they'll tend to do on industrial areas because they tend to be more remote and difficult to get to. And so there's opportunities for electric vehicle charging infrastructure for them as well.
Great. So the next challenge area that was identified is really around connectivity and striving for better connectivity. Carolyn described digital infrastructure as the fourth utility, which is something we're hearing increasingly more. And Mayor Fiaz flagged challenges in Newham around equality and the digital divide, and also the changing nature of work. And obviously we are speaking digitally through our laptops today on this panel. Ben, what are your thoughts around connectivity and digital infrastructure?
Well, the inclusivity issue is a good one, but I suppose doesn't really quite fall within the remit of infrastructure. But you know, it was striking how schools, and particularly state schools in London, for instance, simply couldn't do online teaching because they weren't confident that most of their kids had access to digital connectivity. But I mean, the high level point is that one effect of the pandemic has been to make digital connectivity even more important because there's now so much teleconferencing and remote working. We're going back into our office, the Centre for London, but I'm not going in this morning because the connectivity at home is so much better than it is in my office. So, we really need to up our game. As a city, we're not at the bottom, but we're certainly not at the top when it comes to digital connectivity. That's got to change.
Yeah. One of the other interesting things that Carolyn raised is the challenge of not always knowing who a building owner is, and that causing issues around enabling connectivity and connections to digital infrastructure. She was also keen to encourage a connectivity rating for buildings or some kind of badging system. Rory, do you think this is a challenge we can overcome around this sort of sharing of knowledge and more being more transparent about connectivity of bits of London and buildings?
I think it's definitely an important issue that needs to be sorted out, and it's not just connectivity. If I may just give another example as well, which is photovoltaics, PV panels on the roofs of particularly industrial estates and retail parks, is that that is a sort of crying shame that that isn't happening more. And one of the key reasons it's not happening more is because of the complexities of freehold leasehold arrangements. So I think there are, and that ties in with information and the way in which systems are working, which you're touching on for digital technology. So I think those two points together illustrate the importance of resolving some of these issues.
Yeah. So next on to space and the limitations of space. We touched on density right at the beginning. Giles, could I come to you to get your view on how we can tackle some of the challenges that we're facing around the limited space that we have and how we can make the best use of the space that we do have in the city?
Well, yes, we touched on that earlier, didn't we? I mean, I do think that, if you go right into the centre of London, the Westminster and the city, I mean, we can't create new space. We just have to be cleverer with the space we've got. And I think the initiatives that the city have put in place to get cars off the roads around, say, Bank Junction, it's just made it a much nicer place to be in, and a much nicer place for pedestrians. It's quieter. There's more. The pavements are more generous. You can stand on the street and talk to people without getting a lung full of diesel. But I do think that we need to work harder at this. I mean, a million people have moved to London since I moved here in the late 90s. And, we just need to cope with that influx of people. And I hope, COVID doesn't push them all away again, because London's at its best and most fun when it's really busy and frenetic. What we do as architects, or one of the field we work in very much at Wilkinson Air, is building oversight buildings over stations and over coach stations and over Crossrail tunnels and so on, and actually finding new layers of use. I was describing our headquarters, the Deutsche Bank, above Moorgate, which has got it's balanced above the whole Moorgate station, which is about the size of a football field. And above that, there's two new public parks and a link through to the Barbican. And then above that, the big new headquarters building. And then above that, gardens on the roof for their offices. And within the building, you can get into the tube station. it creates this multi-level city, and people are using it at all levels. I mean, this is what I'm trying to explain in terms of, we only have the one city. We don't, we can't create new space. We need to be cleverer about how we use our existing space.
That's really interesting. Thanks, Giles. Yeah, integrated cities at all levels. Rory, anything from your side to add on this point around space and how maximize have?
Yes, no, indeed. So I think it's not just about the spaces between the plots, maybe I'd describe it, rather than buildings. It's also the plots themselves. And the GLA is got a very positive agenda on this front, but it definitely needs to be followed through. So, for example, there's a recognition now that industrial land needs to be used more intensely, and that doesn't mean losing the industry. It means having more intense industrial activities, so that the amount of floor space increases or is at very least retained in more efficient use of space. And so that industrial spaces typically have very low plot ratios, so that there is a lot of room for manoeuvre to use space in the city more efficiently for industry, for the economy, for housing. I think another interesting area is around the whole crisis in the high street. So the COVID-19 has accelerated what already was a major crisis with declining retail sales, move online, and a need to bring fresh and new ideas on high street uses and change in the balance of mix. So that again is more opportunities for sustainable development that helps reduce the need to travel and make more efficient use of land.
Great. Rory, just coming back to you again on a point that you touched on earlier around legislation. One of the challenges that Carolyn Dwyer flagged was around investment, and that the legislation that currently exists means that it doesn't allow a lot of providers to invest ahead of time in areas where there is a lot of planned development growth, which can mean that in real time there's sort of ongoing disruption for infrastructure being put into developments on a more ongoing basis. Do you think this is something that we can overcome? Does there need to be a review of legislation?
Yes, absolutely, and it's a consequence of the way that Ofwat is set up and the requirements and sort of parameters that it has for its dealings with utilities companies, and that definitely needs rethinking. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, the whole scale of the issue is going to ramp up substantially. So with the move to electric vehicles, the scale of demand for electric energy in London is going to go up substantially, and it needs to be planned ahead rather than reacting to. And the whole question again that was touched on earlier on decarbonising heat, well, there's two main ways you can do that. You can either have electric heat or you can have hydrogen, and depending on the solution, that may mean even more for electrical enhancement of electrical networks.
Yeah, so new technologies clearly going to play a key role. The final question I'd like to put to you all is a broader question. This session is part of the Future of London series. So looking to the future, Ben, I'd like to ask you, what do you think the future looks like when it comes to infrastructure in London, and what needs to happen to get us to the right place?
Well, I mean, I do think we have to sort of pause a bit and just take stock of where we are. And I say that with some reservation, because I'm all in favour of sort of strategy and long-term plans. But it would be odd if we came at this and didn't rethink anything. I mean, I think it's, if nothing else, I'd be thinking a bit differently about transport. I absolutely think we should be continuing to sort of go for modal shift and getting people out of their cars. I think that's more important now, actually, than ever. But I do think there's a sort of an opportunity which I hadn't really seen before around really going for, I mean, a real step change in active travel, walking, cycling, and really embracing the new e micromobility is the sort of scooters, the e-bikes, and the things that come after that. For journeys which are actually now quite long, because with an e-bike you can go pretty far. Before I used to think, well, Shift was all about getting people onto public transport, onto trains and buses. I'm now increasingly sort of wondering about that, particularly when walking and cycling and these micromobilities are by far the most sustainable ways of traveling, much more sustainable, in fact, than public transport. Longer term, if London is continuing to be a global city, we'll have to continue to invest in infrastructure, in things like the Thames Tideway Tunnel or Crossrail, which we've done, but also Crossrail 2 and the extension of the Bakerloo Line. I don't think that the need for those in the end will be that lessened by what we're seeing now. And what really worries me is that there was a sort of consensus building up over the last sort of 15 or 20 years behind that sort of investment. And having a sort of long-term infrastructure plan for London and having the sort of long-term infrastructure sort of guarantees. Boris was making that case when he was mayor. And since Brexit and since this levelling up agenda, that looks increasingly sort of vulnerable. I'm all for levelling up. I'm all for getting investment in other parts of the country. But, don't turn the sort of tap off in London. We are in a very, very vulnerable position right now. The city is moving down league tables, global city league tables, on all sorts of ways, and we really, really are at a sort of critical juncture for the capital, and we need to be making the case, and we need government to get the case for continued investment in what is Britain's only global city.
Thanks, Ben. So an important moment to take stock, but also to make sure we've locked in that investment and those strategies for the future. Giles, you touched on Crossrail and Crossrail 2 earlier and the importance of getting cracking on that. What's your vision for the future and what needs to happen to get us there?
Well, I would say, it has been amazing that, in 6 months we've changed everything and we've all, my office of 200 people, everyone's gone home and worked in their bedrooms and we didn't miss a heartbeat. It actually carried on going. Of course, I'm back in the office and I came in on my bike. But, I do see that, we can't rely on everyone getting on their bikes. Clearly that needs to increase. And we have probably had just probably six driest months in a long time, and maybe that makes everyone feel that cycling to work is a nice thing you can do in the future. But I think the heavy rain's coming in about 4 o'clock this afternoon, and maybe even Ben might feel a little less glamorous cycling in his nice suit. But I do think that I hope people come back to work. I think it's going to be different. I think people are workspaces need to be less serried ranks of bankers' desks and more places for collaboration. I hope the pubs refine their importance in London life and socializing, because you can't really socialize on Zoom. And I think to do that, we need the big infrastructure. We need Crossrail. We need the tube to work, and we need all of people to come together and move about London more and more. I think it's great that all those big those big tech companies like Apple, Google, and Facebook have set their European headquarters in London very ambitiously, and all building beautiful new buildings. And with them, they bring a whole serried ranks of smaller companies, which Britain are very good at, and London leads Europe in, I feel. And I hope that Brexit doesn't damage that in any way, and we don't. I know we're not talking about Brexit today, but I hope the Europe of the London of the future is well embedded in the Europe of the future.
Great, thank you, Giles. Rory, any closing comments from you on the infrastructure that London needs to either become or continue being a truly thriving city?
I think just summing up, there's lots more needed to be done. It needs, one of the points I made earlier, which I think is worth emphasising, it needs institutional will. And that's at the central government level and at local government level. It needs strong leadership and determination to get things done.
Great. Well, that's a good point to end on. And that does bring us to a close. Ben, Giles, Rory, thanks so much for joining us today and sharing your insights. And thanks to the EG partners for this session. It's been great to have everyone involved. Do check out the EG events page for all the details of the upcoming Future of London sessions. For further real estate insights, this year, the London Real Estate Forum's year-round programme focuses on the future fundamental themes of trust, sustainability and digitalisation. To find out more about this programme, visit lref.co.uk. That's it for now. Thanks very much to EG for having me to chair this fascinating session.
Thank you to all our contributors, and thank you especially to Amy. As Rory said, to ensure London's infrastructure keeps up with demand once we return to whatever the new normal looks like, we will need institutional will, strong leadership, and a determination to get things done. Let's hope and let's assume that we find it. To keep up with all of the latest news, views, analysis, and research that the EG Group has to provide, sign up to all our property podcasts and subscribe to Radius Data Exchange for unlimited access to our content and comprehensive commercial real estate data. And do listen to and watch EG's other Future of London events. Each session has insights you need to hear.